And I even remember at one point in time, maybe junior, senior year, seeing recruiters at the school and like to my friends being like, I will never join the military.
Recruiting gets kind of a nasty rep, right? Like you're a recruiter, like you're selling something. Yeah. But I don't look at the guard the same way, because as a recruiter, you always serve with the folks that you brought into the force.
If you're getting into this sport as a job, you're going to fail at recruiting. But if you're getting into this to actually change people's lives and actually help people, you're going to do amazing. Because you're going to give off that genuine feel when you meet someone, and you're going to actually understand what they need and to help them, and then let them understand that you're still going to be here.
I'm Joe C. Mandel, and this is Raven Conversation. And today I'm joined by Sergeant First Classes Adam Laurie and Tramal Williams, both with recruiting, but you guys are no longer recruiters per se. You're now in operations and recruiting, both longtime recruiters in the Guard, here to share some of their wisdom, knowledge, stories about being in recruiting. But then also Sergeant Williams is writing a book, and he's going to share some of that with us as well. So kind of a chance for you to maybe start your media tour early. So we'll start with you, Sergeant Laurie, kind of introduce yourself, intro background.
Yeah. So obviously Sergeant First Class Adam Laurie, full guard story is a pretty long one. Originally, I'm from Indiana, actually, IST to Washington State, 2019. Came over with a 205th, actually, as an instructor. Started working in ops with RB. And then, actually, Sergeant Major Hagemeyer at the time kept trying to get me to be a recruiter. Eventually, I said yes. Here I am about 5 years later in ops now, so...
Yeah. So you were, how long did you actually like physically recruit, like on, like at the shop recruiting on the street every day?
Actually recruiting as a street recruiter, before team leader, it was just about 2 years actually. So I had pretty decent success from the start, which I think helped. And when you do really, really good, then they want you to do more things. So about 2 years as a recruiter, then, about a half a year as a team leader, and then have been in operations as the ops and COIC since, what would it be, October 2023? So rounding up to 3 years, I guess. Yeah.
We'll come back to some of the recruiting successes. We'll go to Sergeant Williams, intro and background yourself.
So I'm from Washington State. I didn't join the Guard initially. I did the Marines first because there is a retired warrant officer, Chief Archuleta. Him and I went to the same high school. He was talking to Guard. I talked to the Guard, but then the Marines sold me on being the best. So I thought I'd wanted to be a Marine, which was fun. And then eventually got out and came back to Washington, ran into Benny. And then he was like, you should get in the Guard.
Now he is not completely retired just yet. Do not put that evil on me, because Benny and I were E3s together back in the day. So
he's almost, he's doing his second part now. But and then decided to join the Guard. Did M-Day for a while, and then I ran into Sergeant Major Hagemeyer, Sergeant Major retired Duncan, and First Sergeant Crystal, and then Master Sergeant Dickinson retired. They brought me on full-time, told me to come work full-time and do ADOS, so I thought I would do ADOS, but I thought I would never come back to active because I did not want to do active anymore. And then, but meeting some really good mentors and leadership in the Guard got me on, and then ran into Sergeant Major Leah and Master Sergeant Bassett, and they were the ones who brought me into recruiting. And it's been full time since then, since 2018. But
man,
some of the best mentors and leaders I had were in the Guard, that I can honestly say.
Yeah. So I always like to ask this question. I think we all have an interesting Guard story. How did you learn about the Guard?
I learned about the Guard. So it's kind of funny. Coming like through high school, I didn't have any interest necessarily in the military. You know, I was going to go to school. I played a lot of sports in high school. And I even remember at one point in time, maybe junior, senior year, seeing recruiters at the school and like to my friends being like, I will never join the military.
I'm pretty sure I said the same thing.
Fast forward just a tiny bit further. So my mom, because my parents were divorced when I was about 13, and my mom met a guy who she was dating for a while. His name's Kelly Kelly, but he was in the National Guard. So I was going to school, paying for the school, you know, getting my student loans building up, and they kept trying to get me to join the Guard. And one day, literally, I was just like, you know what? Why not? I'll do it. So it was because of Kelly, really, why I joined the Guard. Before that, I really had no major interest in joining the Guard, honestly, or the military as a whole. So just happened to have a family member who was doing it, and they talked me into it, and now here I am almost 18 years into my career. So,
it's crazy how that works. I was the same way. I had no interest in joining the Guard. Yeah, exactly. I was like, all of a sudden I was like, man, student loans are going to really start adding up quick.
Yep. Yep. So.
My interest to the Guard, I really didn't have anything in the Army because my grandfather was Army, my dad was Army, my brother was Army, everyone in my family was always Army. So, but no one ever did the Marines. And like I said, I went to see the recruiters at Bremerton High with Chief Benny Archuleta. He chose that, but the Marine guy talked to me, and I was like, I'll do the Marines. And then when I got out, I ran into him again, and then I thought the Guard would be a good choice because no one in my family ever did the Guard. So I was like, I'll do the Guard before everyone else. I always kind of wanted to do the opposite. But I really didn't have any interest in the military because everyone in my family has done it on the male side. But yeah, and then yeah, I wish I would have joined the Guard initially first. I really do feel like I lost a lot of good time that I could have had and beneficial time if I didn't, if I would have just got out of my own way.
Hey, but now you're here and you're bringing people in the, or you were bringing people in the Guard pretty regularly. You were the best recruiter. I'm trying to remember what year it was. I think it was like 2021.
You were 2022. Yep. Then I was 2023. And
Braun was 2024, before. I believe.
No, Robert was. Robert
That's
was.
Right.
And then then Braun.
Yeah. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. So we've had a good string of recruiters bringing folks in. And and so for those watching, recruiting gets kind of a nasty rep, right? Like you're a recruiter, like you're selling something. Yeah. But I don't look at the Guard the same way because as a recruiter, you always serve with the folks that you brought into the force. I always joke, right? My recruiter was then Staff Sergeant Trisha Ovechka, which she still works here today as a civilian. Yep. And I watched her get all the way to Master Sergeant. And she has watched me go from enlisted to officer to now Lieutenant Colonel. Yep. And so it's a bit different. And I think that's something that people need to know is that as a recruiter, you're not just selling a product because you serve in the product you're selling. So
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, cause even for me, you know, with that kind of stigma with recruiting and recruiters, like I never really had interest in becoming a recruiter kind of because of that. And I honestly kind of thought the same thing. And then getting kind of tied into recruiting a little bit, you know, made me see a little bit more. And then ultimately just came to, you know, when I looked at all the ways the Guard helped me, you know, all the things I benefited, you know, the good and the bad with the Guard, just kind of everything as a whole. And I mean, there's so many things I have today, you know, so many things I've learned, grown as a person. I was like, those are the things that you kind of can't put a price on, you know, that, in my opinion, would benefit anybody and everybody. It doesn't matter if you got a master's degree, if you're already successful. I mean, you could be in any situation or you could need a bunch of help in a number of areas, but like the Guard can benefit every single person regardless of your situation. And so that's kind of what it became more to me of, you know, how can I kind of find people and help tie that to, you know, to them in their lives. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly, sir. The way I always explain to everyone that I recruited and enlisted in, I have four people that I recruited that are actually recruiters now and doing great. Sergeant Gutierrez, Staff Sergeant Chang, or Sergeant Chang, Staff Sergeant Fuchs, and Staff Sergeant Nixon, but he's no longer here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He was a recruiter, but the three are doing amazing work. And I tried to explain to them all, the Guard, don't ever sell them that they're going to become rich and millionaires immediately. That's not what the Guard is initially for. The Guard is to give you some mentorship, some emotional growth, and how to merge two lives together into one. And that way, when you meet some mentors or some good leaders in here, they also have a civilian job. So they can tell you how to get hired and what they struggled with. So listen to everyone. And then as you get people under you, just give them the same courtesy that was given to you. Teach and mentor them. Don't let them struggle. And I try to tell people that's the difference between active duty and the Guard. Active duty, you just show up and you do a mission and that's what you're supposed to do. If you're emotionally stable or not, no one really cares until an issue arises. But the Guard tries to prepare you before anything happens because no one wants to see anyone struggle, especially if you see them every day and daily and no one's always going to be around to make sure someone grows.
Yeah. And you kind of said it right there. So you've recruited people that are now recruiting and you guys are no longer street recruiters, even though you still are helping those folks that are out there recruiting every day in the ops. So from an op standpoint, what are you guys doing to help out with the folks that are actually like out at the shops, recruiting on in the streets and at the schools?
So we're giving them, so right now, Sergeant Lori and I are giving them training. So we're trying to show them how to actually get themselves in areas, how to meet the people in the area, how to talk to people, and also processing waivers. If you meet anyone nowadays, when we first started recruiting, probably 3 out of the 10 people we recruited needed waivers. Everyone, about 9 out of 10, everyone needs some kind of waiver, moral, admin, or medical, mainly medical now. But with our expertise of us struggling for those years between 2018 and 2023 before Genesis came live, it was we know a lot of the missteps that we did that didn't help people in some way that kind of messed up the recruiting process. But now we know how to process it and what right looks like. So as people send us stuff, we correct it before they even get it to the next level. So it just helps speed up the process, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I guess adding to that, sir, probably, yeah, just, I mean, one of the big things I would say is, you know, kind of just training the field, you know, giving them information that, because recruiting is kind of an interesting beast of where you kind of learn everything on the fly. You kind of only learn what's in your face type of thing. You know, if you've never ran into a certain situation or dealt with a certain waiver, you know, or a situation with, you know, a person trying to join, you don't really know a whole lot about it. There's a lot of stuff with the regulations that tie into recruiting, you know, who can join, who can't join, that type of stuff. So, I mean, the recruiters do all the work of, you know, going out, finding the people, talking to the people, and we just kind of help say, hey, this is what we need to make this person qualified to join. So yeah, we probably most every day, every person that's at MEPS, it's enlisting, we've, you know, touched something for that applicant for them to be able to join. So it's kind of just our, from our perspective, it's what can we do to make the recruiters' lives easier and to help them, you know, get the people that they're trying to be able to join to actually join. So,
yeah.
Yes, sir. And it's just another little thing to that. We try to tell them these are people. So don't mess up these people's lives. They're trying to join. They want to. Just everyone has some kind of backstory or some baggage. Come to us. We will help you help these people. We don't want to tell someone no or, hey, sorry, we messed up. We sent the wrong stuff. These are people's lives. This is what they're counting on. The more you do for now that they see that you're helping them, the better off that soldier is going to be in the rapport you will build. And then they will probably stay in longer because they'll have that baseline where they had some NCOs who took care of them, got them in and stayed with them.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and you kind of said, led me into my next question. You kind of said right there, these are people, you know, it's part of their lives. It's building that rapport. Not to name, we're not going to name names on this one, but I know everyone has an interesting recruiting story of a recruit that just, there was something they worked. I know for you, you got a whole family. I think, what was it? Four siblings and a brother-in-law and a spouse. Yeah. I mean, that's building that rapport. So, I mean, any interesting stories you guys have?
So the good one, my most successful story was the James family. The way I met them, my daughter was at an elementary school. And it was during Corona, and I was trying to figure out how I can help them situate to get the kids back into school and what I need to do. But one of the teachers was just asked me if I could donate my time and money to help with passing out stuff. And I did that. And then that's how I ran into the mother of the son. And then I ran into her son at West Sound Tech. And then before I even knew that was his mom. So when I showed up to the house, she already knew who I was, knew what I was doing for the community. So it just made it easier. So then she brought her entire family on the second visit. And that's when her three daughters and her one of her daughter's husband was like, oh, I want to join too. So then, yeah, I recruited every one of them. And now they're all prospering. Two have IST out of the state. One's in California now. One's in Idaho. But the other ones are still here. And then my most unsuccessful story that I tried for a year to get someone in was this kid who committed 13 felonies when he was 13. And I thought that he shouldn't be, you know, judged on mistakes of a child, but I tried for 2 years to try to get him in, and eventually every avenue through Congress and NGB, they were like, no, but I still keep an eye on him just to make sure. And I still give him like some clothes and stuff because he still has a bad cut from because nothing's working out, but he really tried for 2 years to change his life around. It's just too many mistakes too early, kind of sabotaged his life.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, sir. I mean, there's kind of a number the way that I see it, and kind of, you know, how I got fulfillment from this job is just trying to help people, you know, in general, in whatever way, and that, you know, what that looks like for each individual is very different. Cause that's kind of the most fulfilling part of the job to me is, you know, helping people, you know, get something that's going to enhance their lives, yeah. Give them opportunities. Maybe they didn't have that type of thing. I had an applicant who, he had a tattoo on the side of his hand, which our tattoo policy has changed slightly, and what tag can and cannot sign off on. But he had a tattoo that was out of regulation. He also was from a foreign country, hadn't been in the United States that long. So he did not do very well on the ASVAB test. So he really didn't have a high enough scoring ASVAB. So he started off with a 4. You need, at a minimum for what would be considered a Cat 4 waiver, is a 16. Technically, to join, you need a 31. So he started with a 4, also had a tattoo, but he wanted to do anything he could to get in. So we worked on getting his tattoo removed, and we just studied. We got him up to a 16, which was just bare minimum that if we were lucky enough to get a Cat 4 allocation, basically, you know, to allow it to waive his AFQT score, that we could get him in. So we probably worked for about a year and a half. He finally got in with a Cat 4 waiver, got his citizenship immediately because he was not a U.S. citizen yet, bought his first house, all these things, and now he's doing great. So I think it's just any situation like that where you like truly help change someone's life, you know, and obviously we're just kind of like the tool to help get them in, you know, they do a lot of it themselves, you know, and it's their will, you know, to get in and to join and all that stuff. But being able to be that person to help people achieve stuff like that is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I ask something real quick, sir? Yeah. Since Sergeant Lori brought up citizenship, when they moved me to King County, I helped about 43 people get their citizenship. But my most successful one there was Specialist Ayel. Her parents were here illegally, undocumented. So she was trying to join the Navy, but and she was 19, the Navy was telling her that she had to wait till she was 21 to do anything like that. They would get her in now, and then hopefully 2 years later, they'll help her do parole in place. We had, what was it, Lieutenant Chavez at the time?
Or Captain Chavez.
Captain Chavez. Probably, yeah. She gave me a whole bunch of information, and I took it back to her and her parents. I enlisted EIL, did all this paperwork with the immigration lawyer with her 1966 DD-4, went to USCIS. We got the parole in place, put in place so their parents couldn't be deported. And then I ran into her at Rainier Reception in December. Her parents got their green card. So less than 2 years later, her parents got their green card from just a guard program helping someone get in. And the way it worked for her, since she was 19, she was 20, but her brother was here legally at 22. So she did the parole in place. And then the immigration lawyer used his citizenship to get the green card for the parents under 2 years.
Yeah.
So it was, and her family keeps sending me stuff to this day, thanking me for helping them become legal citizens and not being deported or their families being separated.
Yeah. Do you find like there's different reasons that people join? I mean, obviously it's education benefits, it's citizenship, it's adventure, it's travel, it's all the things, you know, that we always talk about. What are some of the biggest things that you guys see?
Two biggest ones I would see, one would be the benefits of the guard, you know, whether it's, you know, education, you know, tuition assistance or service. Actually, I think probably the two biggest that I see as a whole. I mean, there is a number of reasons depending on the person, but yeah, those are probably two biggest that I see.
I would say initially when I meet people, it's education and service. But once they see the process, once they're going through basic training, all the training, every one of my, I think I've helped over 250 people join. Either I got credit or someone other recruiter got credit. It's the mentorship. They actually feel like they actually have some people to depend on. I think a lot of recruiters and people don't see the personal side to when they're recruiting people. They just see the legal, the education, and the what they want. They never actually see what their background or what actually draws them to want to join. So there's this personal side that a lot of people don't have. And my wife always said I became like a pseudo father to a ton of people that felt that they could tell me everything that they would not tell their parents. And she's like, I don't know how you do it because I hear you talk, but they feel so comfortable with you. I was like, because they're people. I listen and I hear them. And then I either give them advice that they take or don't take. And she's like, oh, well, okay. But yeah, it's the personal side. Once they feel like they have something they belong to and they have something that's actually caring for them, a lot of people actually just realize the guard is like the best thing for them. That's why I think we have a good turnaround and good recruiting that's going on right now. I think word of mouth from everything we've been doing since 2020 has spread around the state. So recruiting is at its all time high. And it's, I think it's because of the word of mouth and all of us who are still currently serving, going around telling everyone all the good that it's actually done for us. Cause every job comes with negatives, but I think the good outweighs the negatives to anyone serving in the Washington Guard.
Yeah. I mean, that's a valuable point. If let's say a soldier's watching this, they're interested in becoming a recruiter, how do they start that process?
I mean, a number of ways. I mean, the straightforward way is, you know, go online, search the AGR jobs, find the job posting, you know, and put in an application. But I mean, talk to any person that's a recruiter right now, you know, talk to Sergeant Williams or I, come to Camp Murray, you know, meet the command team, if you will. There's a number of ways. The good thing about recruiting is we are hiring pretty often. We did just hire a bunch of new recruiters recently. But yeah, it's a great way also just into the AGR program for sure. And, you know, recruiting isn't for everyone. I will say that, you know, people figure that out kind of on their own over time, but regardless, it's a great opportunity. You know, it's a great way to, you know, learn something new and grow and potentially open up other opportunities, even if recruiting might not be for them. So,
yeah.
And I just remembered the fourth person was Herbert. Specialist Herbert. He just got hired in Kitsap. I recruited his wife, him and his wife's cousin, but him, Gutierrez, Fuchs, and Chang, I pretty much told them exactly what Sergeant Lori said, but I also gave them a little mentorship on what the board is going to be like for the hiring board. And then my best advice to all of them, I said, if you're getting into this for it as a job, you're going to fail at recruiting. But if you're getting into this to actually change people's lives and actually help people, you're going to do amazing because you're going to give off that genuine feel when you meet someone and you're going to actually understand what they need and to help them and then let them understand that you're still going to be here. And so I told him, as long as you keep to those, recruiting will be fine. Just everyone always, recruiting can be, once you look at it as a job, then you actually don't help anybody anymore. You're just doing it for your own self. Recruiting is not one of those type of AGR jobs where you can just show up and do a mission and go about your day and then go home. You have people that are going to need you forever until they actually don't.
Yeah. So then my question is, when did you find time to write a book?
Okay. So I've been writing, I was technically writing three books there from 2015 until about I became a recruiter. Then when I became a recruiter, it just put everything on the standstill and I would just have little thoughts here and there and I would write them down on notes like this will go to book three, this will go to book one, book two. But then about last year, I had eye surgery on March 21st. Then my brother died on March 22nd. So I was kind of stuck in the house for a month and I was feeling everything possible. I was so emotional and I wrote about 600 and something thousand words, so many pages. And then going through it, a lot of it was just me being sad. And so I kind of just took all of it together and put it into the third book that I was writing, took a couple of the characters and then I got it down to 40,000 words. And I was like, hey, I think something's here. And then, after that, Master Sergeant Zorp, his wife is, Kendara Blake. She's a New York Times bestseller. She writes for Disney and she's wrote a whole bunch of New York Times seller books. I sent it to them and they're like, yep, you should send this to a publisher. I think you got something there. And then I did. And then a month later, a publisher called me back and was like, we want this and we want to get going on this.
Yeah. So just talk about your book real quick, when yes, it comes sir. Out, that kind of stuff. This is your opportunity to maybe train for your future media tour. So
yes, sir. So the book should be out this month or next month on Amazon and all the main bookstores. I'm going to have to go around to all the little bookstores in Washington State. And the way I have my contract set up with the publisher, any small bookstores, whatever books they don't sell that they purchase from the publisher, if they don't sell them within a year, the publisher buys them back. So any little mom and pop bookstores will not be out of money. It'll just be complete profit for them for whatever they sell, or they'll just get their money returned. After that, my book is mainly about it's a political fast-paced thriller based in 2029, but it's a kind of dystopian backdrop where if everything, and again, I wrote most of this back in 2015, so I was thinking about what would be the most absurd ways that Americans would either fall into place or try to revolt. And mainly, I just came up with exaggerated stuff. Like I wrote in there back in 2015 about a 900-page bill. But the big, beautiful bill, when it came out, I was like, that's kind of weird. And then I wrote about the whole immigration thing. And I wrote about reporters doing things that are not supposed to, kind of blurring the lines of their jobs to push their own political stuff. So that's kind of what the first couple chapters of the book are, leading up 2025 up to 2029. And then 2029 is when it starts officially. It's about this guy named John Reeves, whose brother gets killed, who eventually has to figure out what actually happened and meeting a whole bunch of Americans who kind of realize what's going on. Their whole plot is to kind of let Americans know that the government's not controlling the country anymore. It's a set of group of individuals and we're going to tell you who they are without giving too much of the book away.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't give too much away. Yes. You want the readers to actually read the book. So, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I have no idea.
Oh yeah. So yeah, fascinating stuff. And the fact that you just sat down and you wrote it over the years of being a recruiter was kind of fascinating in your own time. So, yes. Excited first time plan to have another one.
Yeah. So I started writing the second book, but I kind of started listening to some audio books. So I had to change what I listened to, cause I did not want to steal anyone's, property. So now I've been listening to a whole bunch of books that I wouldn't normally listen to. So I think once I retire from the guard, I'm going to jump back into and finish that second book and kind of a third book if the sales go well. Because I like it and the publisher likes it. I don't know if America is going to like it, but if they do, then of course I will sit down and do that on my spare time and keep the book series going.
Yeah. And it sounds like you use your network in the guard to, yes, to help with this. So
yes.
Sorry, Lord, did you get a chance to see it at all yet? Or
I haven't read the book at all. So he just obviously talked with him about it, you know, show me the cover he came out with pretty recently, all that type of stuff. So I've yet to get my hands on the actual book yet. So
yes, only a couple people, Mass Sergeant Zorb and his wife, they have it. They're the only ones who actually read the whole thing. My wife read a little bit of it, and she hates reading, but she kind of got into it. And was like, I'll wait till it's done.
Nah, but hey, that's how the best books are, though. People usually keep them up here for a long time, and then they finally, yes, come out. I think it took like J.K. Rowling's like 20 years to write Harry Potter or something. So,
mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep. Yeah, she thought about it for a very long time. So, yep. I always like to kind of close podcasts with advice, right? I mean, I think we all come with different pieces of advice, whether it's for people who are in the guard, interested in the guard, not interested in the military at all. Any kind of advice to share?
I guess, yeah, my advice for anybody in the guard would just be that the guard is a great tool or avenue, you know, to achieve or, you know, pursue a number of things, you know, whether you're just, you know, part-time M-Day doing your traditional stuff and doing whatever with the civilian world and using a lot of benefits you can get from the military on the civilian side, or, you know, exploring full-time opportunities with the National Guard. I would just say my biggest advice for a career, if someone's going to make a career out of the National Guard, is that it is what you make of it. You know, so whatever you put into it, the effort you put into finding whatever it is you're looking for, using the resources we have, you can make the most incredible career out of the Guard, or you can do the bare minimum, you know, just as an M-Day, 1 week and a month soldier, and kind of get those benefits that way. But it 100% is an organization where there's a ton of opportunity. It just depends on what you put into it. So,
yeah.
I would say for currently serving National Guard soldiers, at least with this state, I honestly believe this state tries every day and everything we do to make it better. Like when I first came in, there was no rain and reception. Now there's something that what rain and reception is where active duty or soldiers coming back or anyone who's transferred to our state, they get welcomed to the state properly and they get to meet all the people who work for the admin, medical, where they get their gear, and they get to meet like-minded people who are doing the same thing. So it's kind of a way of welcoming you without making you feel alone. So you get to see everyone and then you get introduced to your unit. So it's a good handoff that used to not exist, but it all came about because people said, and people, as they got promoted, changed things. So I was trying to give advice to everyone who's a junior soldier coming in. Just because something seems wrong now doesn't mean it will always be that way. As you pick up rank, your voice does get heard, and your voice does get heard in the lower ranks. You need to say something, and if change can happen, it will happen. That's the only way how organizations do get better. Not if everyone just comes in and says, oh, it's all wrong, and then just leaves. You're not going to fix it if you leave. So stay around and get it fixed, and it will be better for the next person.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. I appreciate the time, guys. And truly, hopefully, we educated some folks on what the Guard is, gave maybe a little bit of info on recruiting, is that it's not all, you know, salesmen trying to sell you something. It's you guys serve with the folks that you're bringing in the Guard. And yep, I think that's critical for folks to know. If you like the video, give it a like. If you want to know more about joining the Guard, I think it's gowaguard.com for the recruiting side.
Yes, sir.
We can definitely put that in the notes. If you have any questions, throw it in there. We'll pass them along. And if you like the channel, subscribe for future videos. Appreciate it coming out, guys.
Yeah, appreciate you, sir. Yeah, thanks for having us.